This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV, Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. French authorities have destroyed a major refugee camp in its port city of Calais. The Calais jungle, as it came to be known, had housed thousands of refugees fleeing war in their home countries. Many were waiting to get into the UK through the Channel Tunnel. President François Hollande approved of the bulldozers that devastated what had turned into a community of sorts, saying the camp's destruction was, quote, dignified but firm and efficient. About 7,000 people will be relocated from the camps, while French authorities are housing about 1,500 unaccompanied minors at a temporary center. My guest is Sabia Rigby. She's the co-coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence, and she was recently in Calais and reported from there. Welcome to the program, Sabia.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to meet you and be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, tell us how long you were there, first of all, and why did you even go there? What was your goal to actually be in this place that, you know, was called the jungle?
My father used to work for UNHCR when I was much, much younger. And so I had gotten a look at the work and became friends with the refugees, and it just seemed like a place that finally at my age I could go and I could be of service to these communities. And I was there for about 15 days, and I was actually working with a house called Maria Skotsova, and in that house there were when I got there, there were about 15 refugees. And the good stories are that half of them went to university. About three of them are in Croisy, a part of France, where they were a part of a theater group. And I'm sure that you've heard it on the news. They were welcomed in the beginning really, really wonderfully by brave volunteers. And then sadly, in the evening, there were protests of about 1,000 people outside this retirement home where they were staying, just saying, you know, we don't want you here, and all of this upheaval. So that's about 10 of our housemates just left. And then we were left with about four or five. And as you were talking about the unaccompanied minors, we have a few, and we're kind of in this position where we're just waiting, you know, we're waiting just like the miners are, but at least we've been able to house some from these containers where in this situation, there hasn't been clear set future goals of how any of the miners are going to be placed or processed. And right. So it's been getting little bits of information, you know, we right. get one piece paper that says this. So we fill that out, and then we get another piece of paper that says this, and we fill that out. And it's really difficult to advise these minors or anyone in that respect to try and tell them, I can guarantee you that you will reach a space where it is safe, or a space where you will enter the UK, and in this period of time. And so there's a lot of confusion with the volunteers, there's a lot of confusion with the organizations that are in Calais. So it's been tumultuous.
What sort of community was created in this camp? I mean, this camp has now been around for, I understand, about a year. How did these migrants from many different countries form ties? Of course, there have been moments when the camp became very dangerous, but in general, what sort of community was created there?
It is incredible. So you've got a lot of quarters, just like you'd have different neighborhoods in California, and just from the organizations that were working with the refugees and the migrants and bringing supplies and resources and tarps, there have been barber shops, there have been, you know, threading shops, there have been tobacco shops, a ton of restaurants, markets, shoe places. You're right, it's a whole town.
So people basically, these were refugees who, through their own sort of enterprising means, created these spaces. I mean, it was a tent city, and there were restaurants in the tent city. Wow.
Yes. Restaurants, there are places where you can just sit and talk with one another, and of course they're serving tea in every little cafe, shop, restaurant, veranda made out of tarps, boxes, tin, anything,
And remind us of the countries that many of these refugees originated from.
You've got many South Sudanese, so the areas in also Darfur, and you've got a lot of Afghans, Iraqi Kurds, Syrians, Egyptians, Ethiopians, Eritreans, Libyans, and many, many more. But that is.
So all of these cultures coming together, most of them united by the fact that they are fleeing insecurity and war, in some cases just horrific violence.
Yes.
What are some of the stories that some of these refugees told you, particularly about their journey there? So they're fleeing horrific violence and war, but their journey to Calais, I can only imagine, was also quite traumatizing.
You're right, Somali. It really was. Coming from a town in Darfur and having the army come through and kind of shoot up the town, your families, and you're fleeing, and then you walk through all of these different countries, land in Libya to find yourself in jail, to see the horrors that they have seen there, to be stuck there for 10 months just hoping that someone will either break it down or they'll find a way out. Their stories are like this, but they're full of so much detail that you really don't, you cannot fathom, no one can fathom it. And that's why I appreciate the work that you do, because it really shares that these things need to be said. If we do not comment on the cruelties that we see, that is how perpetrators get away with some of the things that have happened in history, And so one of the best things about being there and hearing their stories was just knowing that they have come this far, and they came here not, well, they came to Calais not to upset Calais or the people. They are, as you were saying, fleeing. They're fleeing for their lives. It's incredible.
So now what? I mean, why did the French government decide that this refugee camp could no longer continue to operate there? I mean, I understand that this camp was very cut off from the actual town where, French residents lived. That they were basically simply waiting, many of them, to go into the UK. Why was the camp destroyed, and why couldn't they go into the UK?
These are some of my questions as well, and the answers are all over the board. I personally think that it is very political, and too, that it was starting to kind of pick up the fact that there were these people in this wonderful vacation village, not getting the same rights as everybody else that lives there, but also on the other end, from the UK side, there are a lot of people trying to make it over the border illegally, and that was causing conflict and friction. And I think it came to a head, and they were just saying, you know what, now that it's here, we have to address this. And I think, from my point of view, I wish that they had spent more time, kind of figuring out how that would look like, what the process would look like, when they would stop registrations. What happened was, so last Wednesday, we were there, and they started burning the jungle, and we were trying to get people out, and we were moving gas canisters out so that they wouldn't blow up into people's faces. So it was a bit of a hot mess there. And then when we were taking some of our minors that had just registered to the house, we heard that registration was going to be closed. And so I thought, oh, okay, it's going to be closed for the day, for the afternoon, and that's fine. And then when we got to the house, we heard that it was closed indefinitely. And so all of us are surprised because, as you know, there were hundreds of unaccompanied minors that were not registered yet. And then the next morning, we saw the police kind of taking some of these minors that were that did not have registration bracelets away, and we didn't know where they were going or why, and it was because they didn't have registration bracelets. Just and it's just examples like that that were not thought out properly. You know, they would have been registered if registration had stayed open longer or had continued to Thursday while the jungle was still burning.
So then but, Francois Hollande's description of the destruction of this camp being dignified but firm and efficient, quote unquote, doesn't quite hold?
I have to say no. You know, they did try and they did move a lot of people out. It's just, as I was saying before, it should have been a little more thought out. And how, I don't know, since I don't know how that government body works, but I would have liked to have it been a little more organized and thought through more than a month or two, you know? Just like the other refugee cases that we see, they have taken years to try and put in all of these little levels of steps and precautions and care. And it seemed to me that this was done pretty clumsy and a little too quick, and we kept stumbling through it as we are now, as you can see.
And to be fair, of course, dealing with very sort of mass migration slash refugee crisis is never easy, you know, for the host country. Certainly, it's not as though a lot of countries have a lot of experience on how to do this. And it, you know, it's also France was criticized for letting the refugee camp simply be there, and that's being criticized for taking it down. So I want to be fair on that point. However, as I think taking a lot longer and doing it in a more organized way would certainly have been better. Let's talk about what is to happen for all these refugees. About 7,000 people, this is not counting the unaccompanied minors, so about 7,000 people are going to be relocated. What does this mean, relocated? Are they going to be sent back to their home countries, to other European nations, detention centers? Where do they go?
Well, they are right now moved to different centers where they can kind of have a bed to sleep in, eat.
And are these centers where they're restricted, like U.S. family, so-called family detention centers, or are they free to move around?
It depends on which districts, because some are like the retirement homes, others are schools, others are kind of contained centers, but not detention centers that I know of. Hmm. But yeah, right now they are trying to make all of the refugees and migrants kind of stay in these proximities just because of the volatile expressions that have been, well, the demonstrations that have been happening that are anti-refugee and anti-migrant.
Right, so let's talk about that as well. What has the response from the French public been? Many had been criticizing the refugee camp when it existed. However, to have the refugees relocated within the rest of France is also something that's not popular. And that's not to say that all French, I think, have been like this. There have been demonstrations and support, people even welcoming the refugees. As in any country, there's a variety of responses. But has the anti-immigrant sentiment, particularly now, been fairly vocal?
I think they have been vocal for me just because they have affected the fellows that I have known. You know, there are about 35,000 plus districts in France. And like you were saying, 7,000 into each of them, I don't think you would notice, you know? I don't think this is an issue of being overrun. I think, as you were saying, it is a lot of misinformation and the feeling that these people are getting special care, and the people that are having these reactions are coming from a place of feeling like their voices are not being heard.
Let's talk about the children, unaccompanied minors, 1,500 of them. Are these children who have been orphaned or separated from their families? If so, what is France going to do with them, particularly in attempting to reunite them with their families? It just must be an unimaginable predicament for a child to be in, separated from their family. I mean, heartbreaking.
You're right, Sonali. It is, and it is very, very difficult to process these cases. Even there was one Iranian boy that made it over to the UK, and he had to kind of sit in a center while, because like you're saying, there are so many of them that social services, they're understaffed, and so the children, the youth, have to wait until all of these families have been seen. And do they have a bed? Do they have a way to feed this child? All of these things have to be processed. And so, after waiting so long, then they come over to the UK and they're waiting again. It's just been really confusing for them because they're not getting direct answers. They're just being asked to please wait, to please wait. And so a lot of them, even now I've heard that we've lost a lot of them in these in this motion of moving them back and forth and back and forth, and we just don't know where they've gone, you know? And that is the part that hurts the most, because those were children that belonged to someone, you know? And so I don't know how we're going to rectify that situation.
Well, Sabia, where can people read the reports that you've written from your time in Calais? And I understand you even have photographs, etc., that you've taken.
They are on our website at vcnv.org, at Voices for Creative Nonviolence.org.
That's vcnv.org. Well, Sabi, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your experiences at the camp there. Thanks so much.
Thank you to Sonali.
Sabia Rigby is the co-coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. She was recently in Calais, where the refugee camp has just been destroyed by French authorities. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.